I mean, 97% immunity versus a 21% hospitalization rate. I mean, I know which one I'm choosing. Maybe this is just maybe the friends, honey, the doctors.
Sister Science Facts. Welcome to the Rollin' Forward podcast.
I'm Dr. Stephanie Rollin.
And I'm Dr. Alicia Rollin.
I'm a psychiatrist.
And I'm a pediatrician. So today, we're going to talk about measles, part two.
We do have an earlier episode about measles. There have been updates, and spoiler, they're not good. They're not good.
We started this podcast as a way to help families and friends demystify the news, because the news can be really confusing and there have been so many changes over the past days, weeks, months.
We're both physicians now. We're actually not from a medical family. And so growing up, I can remember how confusing it was when there would be these conflicting headlines. And so our goal here, like Alicia said, is demystify, my new favorite word, especially at this time where there's a lot of conflicting statements coming out of organizations like the CDC and the NIH.
Today, we're going to do a brief review of what is measles, how contagious it is, updates of what's been happening in America since the last episode, vaccines and the current recommendations, as well as the hesitancy that we've seen. And then we're going to talk about vitamin A.
That sounds like a good place to start. So measles is caused by the measles virus. And if you're curious more about what measles is and how it spreads, we really do recommend starting with episode 13. We've got all the details in there.
It's called Measles 101, and it reviews what is the measles virus, how it spreads, and the measles vaccine, and something called herd immunity.
So for today, let us just say measles is really contagious. So, so contagious. And that's one of the things that makes it different than some other types of illnesses.
To put in perspective, measles is 7 to 10 times more contagious than coronavirus, COVID-19.
If you've ever tried to socially distance and protect yourself from a family member that has COVID-19, you understand how difficult that is to do. So if you imagine something that's 7 to 10 times more contagious than that, it's a lot. If you do get measles, you know, it starts kind of nonspecific, meaning it's not like you wake up one day and you're like, I have measles. You know, you kind of have a cough and a fever and you don't feel awesome. The giveaway, there's two giveaways for measles. One is red eyes, and the second is this rash that develops later.
So you have 5 days of general nonspecific symptoms with conjunctivitis or pink eye. And then after 5 days of high fevers and these symptoms, you develop a full body rash that starts on the face and moves from the head to the toes.
And overall, you know, a rash doesn't sound that bad. But the problem with measles is that it can lead to these rare but very serious complications, including blindness, deafness, some type of secondary infection, or even death.
The really, really scary thing about measles is that it can linger. And so you can have a very weak, slow-growing measles virus in your brain that can affect you years later. And it's universally fatal. It's called subacute sclerosing panencephalitis. And on average, it leads to death about 7 years after the initial measles infection.
It's estimated that 1 in 600 unvaccinated kids will develop this very slow and universally fatal type of brain infection. And like Alicia said, it is on average 7 years. But the scary part is that this has happened up to 27 years after the initial measles infection. So just thinking about that, hiding in your brain, waiting to kill you, that's the stuff of nightmares.
And 1 in 600 may not sound like that many, but spoiler, we already have 600 cases here in the U.S.
That's right. So even though measles was eradicated in the United States in the year 2000, we've continued to see isolated outbreaks due to people traveling. But now that there's more vaccine hesitancy and vaccination rates have lowered, there's a greater risk for a larger outbreak. And that is exactly what we are seeing.
So the current outbreak that we're seeing in the United States started in West Texas and has spread to New Mexico, Philadelphia, and various other places.
21 states overall at this point have confirmed cases of measles.
So spread a lot of places, and it's rapidly growing. We currently have 607 confirmed cases per the CDC as of today, which we are April 4th. There's been 124 new cases this week alone, which is a 20% increase from last week.
And these are confirmed cases. In order for a case to be confirmed, there's some extra work that has to happen. So it's thought that there's actually even more cases than that. But a 20% increase in a week, we're really starting to see that exponential growth that you expect from how contagious measles is. And although this did start in West Texas, there are now 6 outbreaks, which means 6 regions of this country that have 3 or more cases. And about 93% of all of the cases are linked to one of these 6 outbreaks.
There has been about a 12% rate of hospitalization, but it's actually significantly higher in kids. So in children under the age of 5, there's been an over 20% hospitalization rate.
That's 1 in 5 kids under 5 who gets measles ends up hospitalized. That's a lot. There have been 2 deaths from measles, according to the CDC. One of these deaths is confirmed, and one of these deaths is under investigation. Essentially, this seems to be a person who developed measles, did not seek any medical care, and then died. And so it's a little hard to do the tracing after that, but it's believed that that death was due to measles.
The one confirmed case was a pediatric death in a patient that was fully unvaccinated.
We're just 3 months into this year, and we have more than 600 confirmed cases. And in comparison to 2024, there were 285 cases the entire year. So we are rapidly outpacing that. And it's been theorized that if this growth continues, measles will no longer be eradicated in the United States.
This is the highest number of cases we've had since 2019, which was the year of the outbreak in New York City, in Brooklyn and Rockland County?
Mm-hmm. Rockland County.
Rockland County. And we talk about that outbreak specifically in our last episode and how they were able to stop the spread.
And those 1,200 cases, that was really an anomaly. That was a huge outbreak. And that was over the entire year. So again, we're on pace to beat that record. And that is not necessarily a record you want to beat, but we're on pace for that. This has really been linked to vaccine hesitancy.
Vaccine hesitancy is the delay or refusal to vaccinate individuals despite evidence of safety and efficacy.
In our jobs, in our personal lives, this is something that we hear, that people have concerns about vaccines. Now, what is known about the vaccine against measles, which is called the MMR vaccine, measles, mumps, and rubella, is that it is safe. We have decades of research that have disproven any link between autism and vaccines in general, but specifically this vaccine.
The original study that was highly publicized that suggested a link between vaccinations and autism was a hoax. It was a lie. There was never any true scientific data that suggested this in the initial paper. And it has since been retracted. And there have been hundreds of studies that have definitively shown that vaccines do not cause autism.
But still, people have heard this message and they have concerns. They have questions that they want answered.
We've seen a rapid decline in vaccination rates over the past 5 years. So the all-time high of vaccinations among U.S. kindergartners was in 2019, and that was 95% of all kindergartners who started public school were vaccinated. In 2023, just a couple years later, that coverage decreased to 92%, which doesn't sound like that concerning, but for a disease like measles, that is highly concerning.
And there's such geographic variation in vaccination rates as well. And 95% is kind of that magic number that we think will give immunity to everyone in the population. So that if 95% of people are vaccinated, the 5% who aren't vaccinated will be given protection from the other 95%.
So this drop from 95% to 92% to now likely even lower can be quite devastating because it gives measles a door to enter and it gives measles a chance to sustain itself in the population, which is what we're seeing in West Texas.
And in thinking about these declining vaccination rates, it is important to understand why parents and why families are hesitant to vaccinate. These are parents and families that love their kids, want what's best for them, have heard some weird things in the news, maybe read some things online that was scary, and are hesitant to vaccinate. And that is understandable given the information ecosystem that we are in. And there is a large line of research that seeks to understand vaccine hesitancy so that we can improve the way that we're communicating information.
This is important because you could have the perfect cure to any disease, but if people aren't interested in using that treatment, it doesn't matter that it exists.
Exactly. So it is important to understand and to study vaccine hesitancy so that we as scientists can improve our communication and can improve our outreach to families. Unfortunately, in the past few months, as we've been seeing this rapid increase in measles cases, we've also seen that a number of studies of vaccine hesitancy have been canceled.
There's been a mass culling of grants through the National Institute of Health that you've probably been hearing about in the news, and they have canceled a large number of grants specifically on vaccine hesitancy. These grants have undergone extensive vetting and peer review, but were canceled without a significant explanation.
The party line, the line that was repeated, is that, quote, they no longer effectuates agency priorities. It is the policy of NIH not to prioritize research activities that focus on gaining scientific knowledge on why individuals are hesitant to be vaccinated and/or explore ways to improve vaccine interest and commitment. I mean, I almost want to read it twice because it is that concerning to say that the NIH does not prioritize understanding vaccine hesitancy or exploring ways to improve vaccine interest. Those are two really important variables to study and to understand.
And I think we're going to see downstream repercussions of that. I think we're going to continue to see increasing vaccine hesitancy and lower rates of vaccination for school-aged children.
And that's especially tragic when it comes to measles because we have a great vaccine that is safe, the MMR vaccine.
We talked in the last episode about measles, about how effective the MMR vaccine is. It is traditionally a two-shot series. You get your first dose between ages 12 and 15 months and your second dose between ages 4 and 6. Having both doses of the vaccine increases your immunity to about 97%, which is huge.
I mean, 97% immunity versus a 21% hospitalization rate. I mean, I know which one I'm choosing. As this outbreak is spreading and continuing, there's been a lot of questions about vaccines. And so we wanted to take a moment to address some of those questions specifically.
We're going to break it down by age because guidelines change based on how old you are.
So, Alicia, you said that the first vaccine is given to kids between 12 and 15 months of age. What if I have a baby? What if my baby's less than 6 months old? Can they be vaccinated?
So for infants less than 6 months, they unfortunately cannot be vaccinated, but they're not totally unprotected. They receive what's called passive immunity through the placenta. And so they received antibodies to measles through the placenta if their mothers have had either the MMR vaccine or have had a measles infection.
So that passive immunity sounds great, but it tends to disappear around 6 to 8 months of age. What if I have a baby who is older than 6 months, but not quite that magic 12 months to get the vaccine?
For that 6 months to 12 months time period, you are able to get a vaccine early. So you're able to have an early dose of the MMR vaccine. This does not count towards your two vaccine series, so it would be an extra vaccine that you can get. It's recommended for all infants that are traveling internationally, and now there are new guidelines popping up for people that are traveling domestically to areas that have active cases, or if you're living in an area with an active case. For example, the Texas Department of Health now recommends that all infants 6 to 11 months old get an additional dose of the MMR vaccine.
So now my next question is, I've got a toddler. They're screaming at me because that's what toddlers do. They have strong feelings. My toddler's gotten one dose of the vaccine as recommended between 12 and 15 months, but they're not quite 4 years old yet. So they haven't had that second dose and their immunity isn't as high. What can I do?
Similar to the 6 to 11 month old infants, you can get an additional vaccine in this 12 to 15 months period. It would not count towards the two vaccine series. The only requirement for this second vaccine is that it has to be at least 28 days apart from the first vaccine. So if you get your first one at 12 months, you have to wait 28 days and then you can get a second one. The same kind of recommendations apply. So if you're traveling internationally, if you're traveling to areas that have active cases, or if you're living in a place where there's active measles.
And then for kids who are 4 to 6, they should just get that second dose as soon as they can, especially if they're living in an active region. What about for people that are older? I mean, teens and adults.
So for anyone who has gotten 2 vaccine, they have what's called presumed immunity. It's so successful that we can assume that everyone who's gotten both vaccines are immune to measles. If for some reason a teen or an adult has concerns that they're not immune, for example, if they had testing done for some reason, they can get additional vaccinations, an additional 2 such series done.
And it's also recommended that adults who were vaccinated before 1968 get the 2-shot series with that 28-day gap if they receive the older version of the vaccine. If they receive the current version of this vaccine, they should just receive 1 shot. Now, tracking down vaccination records from the 1960s is not an easy thing to do. So if you're not sure, you can just ask your doctor and see if you can just get another shot. There's no harm to it.
There is a certain group of people that cannot be vaccinated. The MMR vaccine is what's considered a live vaccine. So it has a very small, very weakened virus inside. And so people that have immunodeficiencies, people living in households with individuals with severe immunodeficiencies, or people that are pregnant are not able to receive the vaccine. If you're concerned that you might be in one of these groups, you should talk to your healthcare provider.
They'll know all about this and they'll be happy to share the evidence with you. Now, Lisa, just a few more questions now that I've got the expert in front of me. So I give my kid the MMR vaccine and then they get a rash. Does that mean that they got measles?
In about 5% of patients that receive the MMR vaccine, they develop a transient rash. It generally appears 5 to 10-ish days after being vaccinated. This rash is not measles and you are not contagious. You have not acquired measles. However, the caveat is, if you receive this vaccination and are concerned that you may have acquired measles due to a known exposure or living in an area, then it's possible that this rash is measles and not secondary to the vaccine. And so you should reach out to your local public health authorities.
So basically, if you were exposed to measles somehow, you got worried that you might get it, you get a vaccine, but then you get the measles rash, maybe you got measles from measles, not from the vaccine.
100%. That's correct.
All right. So what if my child is immunocompromised? They get this vaccine. Are they going to be able to spread measles to other people?
So a concern I hear a lot is, what if you don't know that your child's immunocompromised and they got a vaccine? Is that dangerous? What if they're slightly immunocompromised, but they don't have a severe immunodeficiency? Since the introduction of the measles vaccine in 1963, there have been millions of MMR doses that have been administered. And there has been no transmission of measles through the MMR vaccine, whether you are immunocompromised or not. And so if we give it to someone that is immunocompromised, they will not be spreading measles to people.
Okay, so those are my vaccine questions. If you have other vaccine questions, email them to us, send them to us. But one thing that I want to take a moment for us to talk about is vitamin A. Vitamin A.
There has been this big misunderstanding in the media that high doses of vitamin A can cure or prevent measles. This is not true. This is not true. Vitamin A does not prevent measles. It does not cure measles. Only the MMR vaccine can prevent measles.
So what vitamin A is a fat-soluble vitamin that helps with your vision, your skin, your mucous membranes, maintain your bones. And you get vitamin A from your diet, from certain fruits, vegetables, and dairy. In the United States, vitamin A deficiency is very uncommon. Less than 1% of people have a vitamin A deficiency here in the United States. But when you consider regions of the world where there might not be the same access to nutritious foods, vitamin A deficiency is more common. So research suggests that about 50% of children in sub-Saharan Africa have a vitamin A deficiency.
During a measles infection, your vitamin A is depleted in the body, and that can lead to complications, including blindness. This is prevented by giving two doses of vitamin A 24 hours apart during your acute measles infection for individuals that are hospitalized. There is data that giving vitamin A worldwide has been helpful to prevent blindness and has improved outcomes, but the majority of cases of measles are occurring in regions where there is an underlying high rate of vitamin A deficiency.
So it's thought that the success of the vitamin A treatment is more limited to areas where vitamin A deficiency is higher than a place like the United States where vitamin A deficiency is so rare to begin with.
To be clear, it should only be used for active measles infections by clinicians for children that are hospitalized. It should never be used as like treatment at home as prophylaxis or to prevent measles.
And the reason that that is because most vitamins are water soluble. So basically you take a multivitamin every day, you get it. If you have too much, you're just going to pee it out. It's just going to leave your body. But vitamin A is fat soluble, which means it's going to get stored in the fat of your body. And so if you take in too much vitamin A, then your body will keep too much vitamin A. And this can be toxic.
It can lead to brain swelling or really high pressures in your skull. It can lead to liver damage, bone pain, joint pain, vision issues, headaches, skin irritation. It can even lead to birth defects in individuals that are pregnant. Overall, too much vitamin A can be a very bad thing.
This is a concern right now because there are health officials, including the head of HHS, RFK Jr., that has suggested that vitamin A or that certain food products like cod liver oil, which has high levels of both vitamin A and vitamin D, are a way that you should help protect yourself.
Cod liver oil has very high levels of vitamin A and vitamin D, much higher than the daily recommended amounts, and can be really dangerous because both vitamin A and vitamin D are fat soluble, so your body is going to hold on to too much of these vitamins.
And you could have some of that toxicity that Alicia talked about. And that's already what we're seeing in Texas.
Following statements made by RFK Jr. touting the use of cod liver oil, cod liver oil has been in high demand and has been, quote, bestsellers in a lot of West Texas pharmacies. Hospitals in Texas have confirmed treating multiple cases of children for what's called hypervitaminosis A or vitamin A toxicity.
So this is a life-threatening condition where kids are being given more vitamin A than they need, and it's leading to all those toxic effects that we talked about. So vitamin A is not the answer. So Alicia, if I think that I have been exposed to measles, what should I do?
The first thing you should do is you should call your local Department of Public Health. They will help guide you through testing protocols. They will help guide you through next steps. The best treatment for a measles exposure is prevention, and that's being vaccinated.
So if a person who's been exposed is older than 6 months and they're eligible for the vaccine, they should get that MMR vaccine as quickly as possible, ideally within 72 hours.
That's called post-exposure prophylaxis and can help decrease your symptoms. It can help decrease your course of measles if you are going to go on to develop measles. If you are not able to get that vaccine within the 72-hour period, you can receive something called immunoglobulins up to 6 days after your exposure. Immunoglobulins are like someone else's antibodies that they're giving you. While a vaccine helps your body create its own antibodies, immunoglobulins are giving you someone else's antibodies,
which work temporarily. And that's also what's recommended if you've been exposed and for some reason you're in a category that's not eligible for vaccine. Reach out to your public health department. And immunoglobulins are recommended up to 6 days after exposure. After that time period, it doesn't seem to be as effective. It may just be too late to intervene, but your public health department will give you guidance. And that's our update about measles.
Lots of cases, lots of vaccine hesitancy, and I'm worried that it's just we're just at the beginning and it's just going to keep getting worse.
Yeah, so our measles updates may end up being like a 10 arc series. We're just going to have to wait and see what happens. But if you have questions about measles, send them to us. We'd love to hear from you.
You can send us an email at rollinforwardshow. That's rollinforwardshow@gmail.com.
We're also on the socials, the TikToks, the Blue Skies, the Twitters. Just send us a message. We want to hear from you.
And that's all for today. See you next time.
Thank you. Rolling forward, Dr. Sister Science Facts. Are we in the right chairs or the wrong chairs?
We're in the right chairs.
Okay.
We're good. We're good.
We're good. We're good. We're ready to go?
We're ready to go. Welcome to the Rolling Forward podcast.
I'm Dr.
I feel like I did not enunciate.
Here, try it again.